Hi, everyone. My name is Caitlin Taylor, and I am a recruitment and outreach officer at the Institute of International Education. In my portfolio, I do focus on the fine and performing arts, as well as American studies, and I have a regional specialization in the Middle East and North Africa, as well as our Global Scholar Award. But today, what I'm going to be talking about is actually opportunities in the fine arts. The title here says multi-country, but I'm going to be talking about the fine arts. And then before we start, I just want to note that I will be talking about opportunities for individuals that are on the more experienced side, so professors, senior artists, and those with substantial professional accomplishments, terminal degree holders, et cetera. So if you are a current student or have recently completed your undergraduate degree, you are welcome to continue listening, but I would encourage you to take a look at the Fulbright U.S. Student Program, as that may be more appropriate for you at this time. As well, these opportunities are going to be for American scholars and artists. So if you do not have U.S. citizenship or if you're a permanent resident, then the Fulbright Foreign Student Program or Fulbright Visiting Scholar Program would be the most appropriate programs for you. But that said, I'm going to go ahead and get us started by talking a little bit about the history of the Fulbright Program. So this program was established in 1946 by Senator J. William Fulbright from Arkansas. And having had his own exchange experience abroad through a Rhodes Scholarship, he was able to see firsthand the value of international and people-to-people exchange for fostering mutual understanding. His political career over the 30 years that he was in U.S. Congress was marked by his tenure as the longest-serving chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. And Senator Fulbright had a profound influence on America's foreign policy, and his vision for mutual understanding shaped the extraordinary exchange program bearing his name today. The program actually initially was funded using the sale of surplus U.S. government war property from World War II, and it was established by being signed into law by President Truman a little over 70 years ago. The Fulbright Program remains the flagship international exchange program designed to increase mutual understanding between the people of the U.S. and people of other nations, and it is sponsored by the U.S. Department of State's Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs. And then the program is administered in close collaboration with U.S. embassies and Fulbright commissions overseas by us here at the Institute of International Education. And we are a cooperating agency that administers the program on behalf of the Department of State and the Fulbright commissions. The primary source of funding for the Fulbright program is an annual appropriation by the U.S. Congress to the Department of State. Participating governments and host institutions in foreign countries also contribute financially through cost-sharing, direct and indirect support. And the program has had a long and successful history of promoting cooperation among government, higher education, and private sector institutions to increase mutual understanding and address critical global issues. So before I go on to discuss some of the specific award opportunities and a couple of items about how to put together a strong application, I do want to just briefly go over eligibility. As I mentioned earlier, U.S. citizenship is required for this award, so permanent resident status would not be sufficient. And then a degree, you know, it really depends on the award. A PhD or other professional or terminal degree may be required depending on the award, but for artists, recognized professional standing and substantial professional accomplishments are required in lieu of the terminal degree in most cases. Some awards, particularly if you are interested in going and doing some teaching overseas, they may require some teaching experience. And then I also want to mention, if there are any Fulbright alumni tuned in today, that there are new policies that govern eligibility as it relates to previous U.S. scholar grants. So if you previously held a U.S. scholar grant, you know, not a student grant or a Fulbright Hayes or a specialist grant, but a U.S. scholar grant, within the past 2 years, then there would be a two-year waiting period between the time that your previous grant ended and when you would be eligible to apply for another grant. So what exactly does the Fulbright application look like? It's pretty straightforward. Page limits that I'm going to mention here today are hard limits, so if you go over or under, you'll be hearing from us to modify your application materials. So please don't make us do that. Read the directions, and please do try to stay within the page limits. In addition to a standard form with your personal information, we will ask for a 3 to 5 page project statement. And broadly speaking, this document would need to address what you're proposing to do on your grant, how you're going to get it done, why it is important, and then what benefits it will produce for you, your host, and even your home institution back in the U.S. if you have one. It is not required that you be affiliated with a university. You can apply as an independent artist or independent scholar. There is more guidance about the project statement, including a lot of prompt questions and samples on our website, which I will show you guys a little bit later on in the presentation. So you'll also need to submit a tailored CV of up to 6 pages, and then 3 letters of reference are required. If you're proposing to do any kind of teaching, one of the reference letters must address your teaching. We have requirements for submission of references on our website, but I want to underscore that applicants must register their referees in the online application, and references must be submitted via the online application. You cannot submit a reference for someone, and we do not accept mailed-in paper references. So if you're proposing to teach, you will need to submit 2 to 3 sample course descriptions or syllabi with a total of up to 10 pages. And the syllabi should be designed by you, and it should be expressive of your philosophy of teaching. And then you'll want to indicate whether they have been used previously or have been developed for your application. And either is fine. A lot of times we do see that applicants will develop, perhaps one new course and then show us another syllabus from a previous course that they've taught. So really any combination of new or old syllabi are appropriate. And then if you are conducting research, we will need to see a 3-page bibliography, which is more like a lit review without the extensive annotations. And what it's really meant to do is to reflect the current state of research on the proposed topic and include some articles or, in the case of artists, perhaps references to their professional work, which, it may not be an article, but if you want to link to an article about their exhibit or link to their website or to, whatever. That's what we would be looking for in the bibliography. It wouldn't just be samples of your work. It would need to be samples of things that have been created by people other than just yourself. And then depending on the award, there may be some language proficiency required. So if you're planning to teach, make sure to confirm the language of instruction with your host. And then for research projects, so the language fluency that is required would need to be sufficient to complete the research project. So what that really means is the level of language that you need will depend on what you're planning on doing. So for applicants without local language proficiency, feasibility of conducting research must be demonstrated in the project statement and the language self-evaluation form. So that means that if you don't speak French or Spanish or whatever language might be required in the host country you're proposing to go to, you'll need to note in the application components whether you'll be, you can feasibly complete the project using English or if you plan to work with a translator or whatever, but you just want to address that, that question in your application in both of those pieces. And then non-native speakers who do have language abilities and would like to demonstrate them in the application if it is going to be required to complete your teaching or research activities. What we'll do is we'll ask you to complete a 2-part language proficiency report. Part 1 is a self-evaluation, and then Part 2 asks you to register an external evaluator within the application. And this part of the report would then be completed by an appropriate foreign language instructor through the online application reference system. So it would sort of serve as a 4th letter of reference, although it would be much shorter and would be limited to them just speaking about your language abilities. And then depending on the award, we may require a letter of invitation from your host institution, and I'm going to dive into that a little bit deeper in a couple of slides. And then there are also supplemental materials required for applicants in the arts, architecture, writing, journalism, which I'm going to dive into in our next slide. And actually, before I move on, I do see a question here. With the bibliography, is it appropriate to submit an abridged or full literature review as well? So the bibliography is sort of like a literature review. It would need to be abridged, but you wouldn't be able to submit an additional one. So you would just need to limit it to the 3 pages that are allotted in the application. Okay, I'm going to move on to the supplemental materials really quickly. So how does the application differ for applicants in the arts? So you will need to submit a digital portfolio that speaks to your ability to carry out your project. So your skill set in the field or the medium that you are proposing. If you don't include these materials, your application will be negatively affected in the review process. So the supplemental materials will be directly uploaded into the online application system and assigned to your application after submission. At the moment, I do believe that the application system for uploading the supplemental materials, I'm not sure if it's active yet, but it is in the process of being uploaded. So the regular online application is there, and you can get started on that piece now. And then the supplemental materials, we will have that system up and running shortly. So you may only upload one file per application, and you would compress all the materials into a single zip file that would not exceed 500 megabytes. And then materials may be submitted in one of the following formats listed on the screen. So it will be a sample of your work. And I do get a lot of questions about whether you can include a link to your website. This would not be the best place to put it. If you would like on your CV, sort of at the top of the page, to include sort of a link to your artistic web page, then that would be appropriate. But you would not want to submit a list of, a bunch of links to lots of different pieces of your work, because, to be honest, the reviewers are not going to have time to look at every single thing that you've ever worked on, so you want to just give them a sampling of some of your strongest work and the work that would be most directly applied to the project that you're proposing to do. So can the bibliography be reviews of my artwork? I suppose you could include a couple of those things, but what the bibliography is really looking for is a survey of, what is being done sort of in your field. So it would not just be reviews of your work. It would need to be, a survey of here are a couple of other artists that are doing similar kinds of work, sort of in that range. I'm just reading some of your questions here. Okay. So I saw a question, can I include a link to a website in lieu in addition to the 10 image? So I think I answered that question about in addition to that it would be something you would just add on your CV, but it would not be in lieu of uploading. So you will need to upload those images here as well. Okay, good question. If your project involves creating photographs supported by writing, is it possible to send both images and text in my application? Yes, that would be possible. I think that it's really up to you how exactly you do that. But what I have seen in the past is if you want to upload images, you would sort of have them on the same page, the image at the top of the page and then the writing at the bottom of the page. So that's what I would recommend in that particular case. But for any questions that are really specific to your personal project, you can reach out to me or, I'll provide more information about who to reach out to. But I don't want to get into too much into the weeds with people's particular projects if it's not going to be applicable to the whole group. Let's see. I see your viewers understand that images get blurred when confined to 500 megabytes, correct? Yes, they understand. We just do have, limitations within our system of how large of files we can upload, so that is the reason for that limitation. Do you need a list of words to describe media, scale, et cetera, with the image file? Yeah, that's fine. You can include that if you want to. It's not required, but if you'd like to do that, that's fine. Okay, looks like still some confusion about the bibliography. So the question here is, we list our own work as well as related research being done. Yes, that is correct. You can list some of your own work. You would list some of other people's work. Really, the intention of the bibliography is to give the reviewers a sense of where your project fits within your field. So if you're only giving them a snapshot of your own personal work, it doesn't really give them that snapshot of what is being done more broadly within your field. So it would not just be works done by you, but also works done by others. Okay, a question. I'm a filmmaker who's done over 40 feature films. Can I just send the reviewer to IMDb? No, that would not be appropriate. So you will still want to include at least one clip in your supplemental materials file. And then if you would like to include a link to your website on your CV, that's something that you can do. But we can't just send them to IMDb. They'll want to actually see video samples of your work. Okay. Word file. So do writers include a word file or galleys from published word or both? So you can include either. It would just need to be in PDF format and could not be longer than 15 pages. Okay. Okay, I'm going to sort of move on so that we can get to all of the other slides and awards. But if you guys have any more questions about the supplemental materials, feel free to reach out to me. And if it's really specific to your case, I can go into more detail for you. Okay. So the letter of invitation, like I said earlier, depending on the award that you apply to, a letter of invitation may be required. The letter of invitation is an expression of interest from a host institution. And while there are no specific requirements for these letters, well, that's not true. There are two requirements for the letters. One is that they need to be on official letterhead, and two is that they need to include dates. The dates for which you're being invited. But other than that, the format is pretty open. And what they would want to write is, you know, what you're being invited to do. And good letters will have a description of the host's interest in your project. The letter would need to be in English. And if it's not in English, you would need to include an English translation of it along with the original. But then how do you get this letter? If you do not have any contacts in your country of interest or contact information is not listed in the award description, which it often is, we have some recommendations. Use the resources on your home campus is a good place to start, such as the international office or talking to your colleagues. You can also take a look at our scholar directory, which lists the names, project titles, countries, and host institutions of previous Fulbrighters going back, I think, to 2011. Our alumni are very helpful people, so if you see someone who has previously gone to a country that you're interested in going to, you know, you can reach out to them and ask for an introduction to their contacts. Also, you know, Google is your best friend. Look at the university websites in the host country you're interested in and locate contact information for different departments. More often than not, you can find this information with a couple of keystrokes. We do not keep the names and contact information for people, specific people at host institutions, so this part requires some hard work and ingenuity on your part. Sometimes the names and contact information will be listed in the award description, and if that is the case, then that takes a lot of the work out for you. And I will discuss the award highlights in the region in a moment, but I also encourage you to browse the catalog on your own. You can narrow down your search by region, country, discipline, keyword, and I'll go into the catalog and show you what that looks like in a minute. But discipline preferences are typically listed in the award description. And there are also many, many all-discipline awards to almost every country, which are open to scholars in any field. So as I am kind of going through the awards, keep in mind that these are just, it's just a sample of a couple of awards. It's not all of the awards that are open to people in the fine and performing arts. I want to take you guys to the catalog really quick. So it's awards.cis.org. And as you can see here on this side, there are lots of different ways that you can sort of refine your search within the catalog. There are over 400 awards in the catalog, and so we recognize that it is difficult to narrow down narrow it down to one award. Another frequently asked question is, can I apply to more than one award? The answer to that question is no. You can only apply to one award each application cycle. I'm going to take you into the catalog for a moment. Okay. And as you can see here, I prefer to search by the advanced search function. But over here, what you can do is you can sort of search by discipline. And if your discipline is not listed here, that does not mean that there is not a Fulbright out there for you. We just sort of have some broader categories to try to encompass lots of people under one discipline. But you can also search by keyword if you're interested. So if you wanted to look at opportunities in film and you search by keyword, you'll see that there are 36 different awards that include the word film in the award description. These are all opportunities that would be open to you. But then also do keep in mind that the All Disciplines Awards, even if the keyword is not listed, you should still consider the All Disciplines Awards as well. So host countries will invite applications in the artistic disciplines by offering either discipline-specific awards, like I mentioned, or an all-disciplines award. And then when you open up the catalog, you'll see that there are numerous ways to search. In addition to the discipline that I showed you, you can also search by grant length. You can search by activity, and this would mean, do you want to conduct research? Do you want to teach? Do you want to do both? You can narrow down your options that way as well. Once you've selected an award to view, you'll have access to a lot of information that will guide your application preparation. On each award description, you will be able to see contact information for CIS staff, an overview of financial benefits and allowances for each country, award information such as the grant activity, the content of the award, possible host institutions, requirements for letters of invitation and language proficiency, the length of the grant and when it would start, and so on. I encourage you to take some time to review the expectations of each award and to do your own research into the educational systems and cultural context to make sure that you're presenting an ideal match between yourself and the host country. Now I'm going to kind of jump into some of the regional highlights. Like I said earlier, these are not the only opportunities that are available, but I just wanted to pick out a couple of key ones that I thought would be interesting to all of you. So in Sub-Saharan Africa, there are many opportunities, but the two that I wanted to highlight today were Ethiopia and Mozambique. So in Ethiopia, this would be a 10-month grant that would allow for a combination of teaching and research activities. Applications in all artistic disciplines are welcome, and Addis Ababa University in particular is seeking applications in the fine arts. So scholars would teach undergraduate and graduate courses at the host institution, and all teaching would take place in English. You may also be asked to assist with undergraduate and graduate project supervision or thesis advising, contributing to curriculum development. And then as a part of this grant, you would also be able to conduct research in your area of specialization as well. Previous Fulbrighters have worked on a range of topics, from a study of the benefits of community-based art and communities affected by HIV to a photographic documentary of nonprofits. And then in Mozambique, that's also a 10-month award that would allow for either a combination of teaching and research or teaching only. And then applications are sought in all appropriate disciplines, but fine and performing arts are a priority discipline for this country. And so scholars would teach undergraduate and graduate courses in any discipline taught at the university, also assist with tutorials, thesis advising, student research papers, and curriculum development, and then conducting research in whatever your area of specialization is. And then for this particular award, Portuguese is required. Okay, moving on to the Middle East and North Africa. Egypt is a really interesting place to go, and this is actually the first year that we are reopening Egypt, so there is a great need. They haven't hosted a Fulbrighter, especially for this particular award, in a while. But artists specializing in painting, graphics, sculpture, folklore, visual effects, vocal studies, opera, drama, photography, music, they're only looking for orchestral instruments or dance, and they're looking really for all specializations within dance except for tap. So you'd be encouraged to apply for this really interesting four-month teaching grant to either Helwan University or the Academy of Arts, and both are based in Cairo. No letter of invitation or language proficiency is required for this award, and I just want to sort of note that Egypt does have a very supportive Fulbright Commission in that country that does help, you know, Fulbrighters to find housing, to make connections while they're there, and, you know, offers opportunities for you to socialize with other Fulbrighters. So I can't recommend Egypt highly enough. And then another opportunity that might be of interest is Jordan, particularly if we have any filmmakers in the crowd today. Applications in all fields are welcome. In recent years, Fulbrighters specializing in film studies, as well as creative writing, thinking, and sculpture have been hosted by universities and arts organizations like the National Gallery of Fine Arts and the Royal Film Commission. And then the Fulbright Commission in Jordan provides a deep support network for all Fulbrighters in Jordan as well, similar to Egypt. And dependents are welcome. There is actually additional funding available to cover the cost of tuition for any dependent children that would accompany the grantee. And then, as is also the case in Egypt, all teaching would be in English unless it would otherwise be specialized by the host institution. Not listed on this webpage, but another one that I do know is very open to applications from individuals in the arts is Israel. There's a four-month Senior Scholar Award to Israel, and many artists do actually choose to go to Israel as well in the region. Okay, and then moving on to the Western Hemisphere, and that's sort of the way that we describe South America, Central America, the Caribbean, and Canada. So in Canada, there is a four-month Research Chair Award in the Arts, Humanities, and Culture. And these chairs are targeted specialized opportunities for scholars to be part of a host faculty. The Fulbright Canada Chair will conduct their own research and work collaboratively with colleagues and students and become involved in the local community. The four-month award offers the opportunity to affiliate with one of six different Canadian universities, including the University of Alberta. And at the University of Alberta, projects in film studies, music, drama, and more are of particular interest. So if you're interested in Canada, we do encourage you to take a look at the University of Alberta. And then in Chile, there's a Social Sciences, Humanities, and Education Award. So on this 3 to 4 month grant, scholars would deliver lectures, seminars, or workshops to students and professors, and then also assist with curriculum development in their area of specialization. And then there would also be opportunities for collaborative research and publication with Chilean colleagues. The arts are one of the areas that are particularly encouraged in Chile. Okay, I have a couple of good questions. Going back to the Middle East slide, would one teach in Egypt? Yes, this award, the Egypt Award, is a teaching award. It would be teaching only. And then is there a place where past artists that went to Israel are listed anywhere? Yes, that would be in the scholar directory, and I can actually show you guys where that is right now. So I think it would be helpful for you all to see. And I actually linked to it earlier in the presentation here. Let's go there. So this is the Fulbright Scholar Directory, and it will list, you know, everyone that has done a Fulbright in the last couple of years. And if you want to take a look and see who has done a Fulbright, we'll use Israel as an example. You would look at U.S. scholars because we want to look at people that are going overseas. Then we'd want to look in the CORE program, which is just the CORE Fulbright Scholar Program. And then you could go to the country, search by country. You can narrow it down by discipline, but I'm just going to do a broad search right now so that you guys can see that there are, you know, lots of different ones. But you can sort of sort by discipline and see, okay, there are a lot. Here are a couple that are in the arts. So as you know, if you kind of go through here and you know, are able to kind of spend some time and explore, you'll be able to see lots of different kinds of projects that have taken place in Egypt. This one in particular was really interesting. This is an independent scholar artist that specialized, I believe, in painting, and her name is Sainoa, and she went to Israel in 2016. And so it'll have their project title, exactly where they went, listed as well. So if what you were interested in, you know, if you were interested perhaps in Israel, what you could do is either, you know, go to this host institution's website and take a look at and see, you know, what departments they have listed and if there are any contact information listed for specific professors there, or, you know, you can Google this individual and, you know, find her email address. It'll be out there. And then, you know, just ask her to introduce you to her host, and, you know, 9 times out of 10, our alumni are very helpful and interested in helping. So yeah, that is the scholar directory. I'm glad that someone brought that up. Okay. Now going back to, okay, let's go on to the next region. So we have in South and Central Asia, one award of particular interest might be the Fulbright Nehru Academic and Professional Excellence Award. So there are 45 different grants available for teaching or research, or a combination of teaching and research, in one of the most diverse countries in the world, and the largest in South Asia. The award is open to academics and professionals, but a terminal degree is not required here. In past, Fulbrighters have been hosted by the National Institute of Design, the Museum of Hand Printing, the Shirishi School of Art, Design and Technology. The Fulbright Commission in Egypt also provides a comprehensive support and networking opportunities for grantees across the country. And for this particular award, dependents are welcome. And additional funding is available to cover the cost of tuition for children that accompany the grantee. Okay, a couple questions. I missed what you said about the language for Egypt and Jordan. Did you say that English is okay? Yes. All teaching would take place in English. No Arabic proficiency is required. Let's see. Okay. Looks like we have more questions about Chile. And I just do want to kind of show you guys, when you go into the award descriptions, this is what it will look like. And you can see here, the particular question I got was, can you do teaching in Chile? So the activities here would be that you can either do teaching or a combination of teaching and research. And as you kind of scroll down through the award, I'd say one of the most important pieces here is actually the program staff that's responsible for the award. For this particular award, my colleague Pierre Rauchi is a specialist that you know, works on the Western Hemisphere. So you can reach out to Peter at this email address here, westham@iie.org, if you have any questions about this particular award. But for, as we're going through, if you have questions, you know, can I teach during that award? How long is it for? You'll be able to find all of that information within the award description in the catalog of awards. Okay. Okay, I'm going to keep going, and we'll actually have a question and answer session at the end of the presentation, so I'll try and get to some of these questions the rest of your questions when we get down to the end. Okay, another opportunity in South and Central Asia would be in Nepal. And so this is a wonderful opportunity for artists and scholars to teach and research in Nepal, which is a country that has undergone significant political and social change in the past two decades. Applications are welcome in the fine arts, such as painting, sculpture, and performance arts, music, community development, or media studies. Grantees would be affiliated with Kathmandu University, and applicants in the arts for this award would be required to hold a terminal degree in their field, which would most likely be an MFA, and would be expected to have recognized professional standing and substantial professional accomplishments. Okay, moving on to East Asia, one opportunity that may be of interest is in Taiwan. Applications are in all fields are welcome. However, arts projects involving arts and culture are particularly sought this year. Examples of previous projects include Sounds of Taipei, a new multimedia work, and the Traditions of Chinese Painting Conversation. For research and teaching research grants with prior approval, up to one-fifth of your total grant period may also be spent in mainland China. And then for this award, all teaching would be in English. Another interesting award is in Australia at the Australian National University, where you would be able to undertake collaborative research with faculty in the arts at the Australian University in Canberra, which is actually Australia's capital city. Scholars are encouraged to collaborate with the scholars that are at the institution and give short seminars. And then you would connect with the point of contact listed under the award requirements to discuss your project and obtain the letter of invitation that's required. So for this award, if you go to the award description, you wouldn't really have to do much searching for a host because the contact information is already listed. Okay, and then for Europe, there are, you know, these are just four of many, many opportunities in Europe. But one that I wanted to highlight was in Austria. So this would be a two-month grant beginning on March 1st in 2020. And it's located in the center of Vienna at the Museumsquartier Vienna, which is one of the 10 largest cultural complexes in the world. And then the purpose of this award is to give creative artists of all contemporary media an opportunity to work in residence with one or more of over 50 institutions and autonomous cultural and artistic initiatives situated at the museum. Please note that for awards to Austria, the quality of an applicant's proposal is more important to the Australian American Educational Commission than the academic rank of the applicant. And then what they're kind of looking for in terms of disciplines, they're looking at art, dance, film studies, music, theater. It welcomes candidates that are early in their career. And then grant activities would be conducted in English. There's another award in the UK that is for 6 months, and it would be for either a combination of teaching and research or research only. This award offers opportunities to conduct research and contribute to the intellectual life of the host university through seminars, public talks, and curriculum development at the Glasgow School of Art. Applications are sought in any subject relevant to a couple of different research themes, which would include architecture, urbanism, and the public sphere, design innovation, digital visualization, education in art, design, and architecture, contemporary art and curating, health and well-being, material culture, and sustainability. Another is in Ireland, a visual arts award, which is an opportunity for senior academics and professionals to conduct teaching and research for 6 months at the Irish Museum of Modern Art, which has a large, important archive of material on contemporary Irish artists working in Ireland and abroad, as well as artists from other countries that have worked or continue to work in Ireland. In order to more fully utilize this collection, the museum is seeking an art historian trained in archival methodology and practices, or a professional archivist with knowledge of modern contemporary art. This selected individual will continue the development of the archive into an accessible digitized repository of information. And the person would also assist the collections department in research related to ongoing curatorial projects. And then another one is in Portugal. This award offers performing artists the opportunity to teach contemporary dance technique and interpretation. There is also a research element to this award. And the teaching and research activity is designed for undergraduate students and aims to develop the students' physical, technical, artistic, and analytical skills. And this would all be taking place at the Polytechnic Institute of Lisbon's School of Dance. So I know I've kind of glazed over these all very quickly, but you know, if you're interested in any of these opportunities, diving into the award descriptions is going to be the best way to kind of explore more. So I want to quickly go over a couple of tips that I have for all of you about how to put together a strong application, and then we'll dive into more of your questions. So first, you know, how do you find the right award for you? That's a good question. You know, you want to make sure that you're establishing clear parallels between your expertise and the project and the stated award description. So remember that the project statement is a relatively short amount of space to communicate a lot to the review panel. It's a self-introduction to reviewers and an opportunity to provide answers to the questions that the committee may have about you, such as, you know, why are you interested in a Fulbright Award and why to this particular place? Take some time to research what current education challenges or research streams are going on at a particular institution or within a country. You know, explore what courses are being currently taught and how your teaching philosophy can merge with the curriculum that already exists. And state clearly why you need to live in the host country to accomplish your project's goals. That is key. And then what are the professional experiences and training that you offer the host institution or the country? And then what personal value do you intend to gain from this experience? And what will be the potential lasting value not only for you, but also for the host institution and the host country, as well as your home country and your home institution. The reviewers are also looking to see that you are adaptable and that you've dealt with challenging situations before. Remember to focus on your plan of action and not just reiterating information that can be found in your CV. So keep in mind that your proposal is reviewed by many different stakeholders and review panels, so make sure it is digestible to people who are outside of your field. There will be a discipline review panel for more technical aspects, but in general, you want to make sure that the value of your project is evident to those outside of your field who would be looking at your proposal. And then regarding your references, we do require 3 current reference letters, and you know, a tip here is while it is useful to have someone that has a known reputation in the field, what we've found is that some of the best criteria for recommendations would include someone who knows your work and your character very extensively. And we also do advise mixing internal and external letters to demonstrate a breadth of your contacts. So for instance, you could get, you know, current reference letter, one from your supervisor, one who's, you know, a colleague but not at your home institution, and then, you know, another from someone that knows your work very well. And then for research proposals specifically, again, you should establish a clear need to reside in the host country and how, you know, your methodology, whatever your plan is to use at the time of your proposing, you want to be ambitious, but you also want it to be feasible. So some questions you might want to consider as a research applicant, in what ways are you connecting or initiating new research for the discipline? You know, what is the state of research facilities and other resources where you're going to be going? What access will you need to them and how will you prepare for that? And what are the challenges facing your specific methods and how will you address them? So these are just a couple of tips, and you know, we are very happy to go into more detail you know, in advising you over the phone or over email. And then another resource that I would point out is to take a look at the review criteria on our website to kind of see what the reviewers will be looking at when they are looking at your application. Okay, I quickly want to go over the timeline. So most important to note is the August 1st deadline. And then after you complete your application and submit it to us, the applications then go through a technical review process, where we make sure that applications are complete and that all materials are within the allotted page limits, among other things. So you may hear from us at this time if we have any questions about your project or your eligibility. From there will be a series of U.S.-based reviews, beginning with a discipline review. And this would be, you know, people in your, typically within your medium as close as you can. For example, we have a photography discipline committee. We have a painting discipline review committee. We have a creative writing discipline review committee. So we do try to fit you as closely as we can with a panel of two or three different scholars that artists that you know are very familiar with the kind of work that you would be doing. After that, you know, they will sort of look at your application and provide some context for the U.S. peer review committees. So they'll be able to say, yes, this person, their work is outstanding, and you know, this project that they're proposing is really interesting and groundbreaking. You know, or they'll be able to say, this, you know, we've seen 100 different projects like this. It's nothing new. So there will be artists within your field that really do have more of that context to provide a little bit of background for the regional reviewers. And the regional reviewers will be former Fulbrighters that usually went to either the host country you're proposing to go to or somewhere within the region. And this is based in Washington, D.C. We get together in a room with three reviewers and one facilitator to discuss the applications and make recommendations based on the review criteria. And you can find those review criteria on our website. Applicants will be notified around November if your application is going to be recommended for further review abroad. If you are, the applications are then back sent to the countries in question who conduct a final review process. They're also simultaneously reviewed by the J. Willem Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board, which is the organization that sets the operating policies for the program. And then the time frame for notification ranges widely from country to country and from year to year. So typically, you would receive the sort of final notification in early spring, ideally, though some countries do complete their selections in the late spring. And the CAS website was recently refreshed to be really great use to you as you are assembling your application. And I just want to point out a couple of these resources. I did already show you the catalog of awards, but we do have application and instructions that are pretty helpful, as well as guidelines, project statement guidance, and samples. You know, many of you probably found out about the webinar from an email that was sent out to you. And if you want to be connected with us to receive more news about, you know, webinars or deadlines or tips, things like that, you can sign up for our online community. It's called My Fulbright. And you would just fill out a couple of questions about the countries and disciplines that you're interested in, and then we would be able to provide some tailored information, tailored webinars to you. Another great resource, you know, are some other webinars, not just this one. There are going to be other webinars coming up that, you know, really dive into the application in more detail. And there have been other webinars recorded as well. So I would encourage you to kind of go and explore that. Okay. All right. So I want to try and open it up to questions now. It looks like we have about 10 minutes. So go ahead and type them into the chat box on your screen if you haven't already. Like I said earlier, if your question is really specific to your situation, we may just want to talk offline following this webinar. I also want to mention that we will be archiving this webinar in the next couple of days. So if you're interested in listening to the full presentation or taking a look at the slides, or sharing, you know, with your colleagues, they will be there. Okay, so diving into your questions. Is there a preference for institutions that have not hosted a Fulbright Scholar before? That's a good question, and that will depend on the award. Some awards will say, you know, there's a preference for rural areas or institutions that are outside of the capital city. Sometimes they will say that. But if that's not listed in the award description, then there is really no preference. You'll just want to make sure that whatever host you're selecting is eligible as defined by the award. Okay, when the description says art, does that only mean visual art, or might it include creative writing? That's a really good question, and that is something that I would recommend if there's a particular award that you're looking at, to contact the program officer that is responsible for that award. They may have more context about whether you know, there are other specific disciplines, or they can actually ask the host country, you know, is this the kind of project that would fall under this discipline? So reaching out to the program officer would be what I would advise. Okay, I'm just reading some of your questions. Okay, this is a good one. Are you allowed to apply to a country that you have been to before? Yes, but you can. There may be a couple of countries that there would be an issue with dual citizenship, but there are only a few, and if that is an issue, it'll be listed in the award description. But generally, you know, it kind of comes as both a positive and a negative. So if you've spent a lot of time in the host country before, then you may have a cultural context that will help to make your project successful, or language abilities, or strong connections to the host institution that you're planning on going to. And if that's the case, then, you know, perhaps they're able to write a really strong letter of invitation. What I would say is that if you are applying to go to a place where you have spent a lot of time already, what you'll really want to emphasize in your application is, you know, what new things are you going to be getting out of this Fulbright grant that you didn't get on, you know, previous trips to the country. Because, you know, the mission of the Fulbright program, which I think I've said a couple of times now, is to promote the mutual understanding between the people of the U.S. and people of other countries. And so, you know, if you've already spent a lot of time in the host country, you know, you may want to choose a new or different host institution that you haven't worked with, and really just talk to the reviewers about why this particular country is important, why this work can only be done there, and then whatever new things, new connections, new relationships you're hoping to get out of the grant. Okay. So there are a couple asking for my email address, so I'm sending that out in the chat box. I hope you can all see it. It's ktaylor@iie.org if you need to reach out to me. Oh, great. Okay, a question about the flux option. That's great. So the flux option is sort of new for the Fulbright program. We've only been offering it for the last couple of years. And it's only available for specific awards. So what Flex is, just to kind of rewind, Flex would be a kind of grant that you could do where if you wanted to split up your grant into shorter segments over time, you know, if you wanted to split them up into 1 or 2 month segments and you go twice or three times over 2 consecutive years. So it sounds a little confusing, but, you know, for example, if you had a project where you were wanting to look at something over time, or, you know, for whatever reason, it, you know, one long, you know, 10-month grant is not going to be the best fit for you, if you wanted to split it up, say go to Morocco for, you know, 2 months in the fall of 2019, and then 2 months in the spring of 2020, and then another 2 months in, you know, the following fall, you could do that. So it's sort of splitting them up into shorter segments and spreading them out over time. There are specific requirements around Flex, so each grant segment would need to be at least 1 month long, and each grant segment wouldn't be no longer than 3 months, but then when you add them all up together, they would need to be no longer than 6 months. So it'll be much easier to kind of explore that if you actually look at the Flex awards. And if you are interested in a Flex one, what I can kind of show you is how to search for Flex awards. So if you go into the advanced search function, you'll see over by grant length, you can search for Flex awards. And if you search by them, you'll be able to see which, you know, there are 70 awards that offer Flex. And then pop into that award, and the Flex description will give the exact parameters of the grant. So that is Flex. And if you have any more questions about that, feel free to reach out to me. Okay, do I need an affiliation for the research part of the proposal or just the teaching aspect? So you will need a letter of affiliation regardless of what kind of grant activity you will be doing. Unless it's one of the rare awards that say do not seek a letter of invitation. There are a couple that don't want you to seek one out. But the letter of affiliation would need to cover both parts of your project. Yeah, hope that answers that question. Grant benefits, does it cover living expenses, travel, etc.? Yes, and each award will have slightly different award benefits. If you are within the catalog of awards and navigate over to the award benefits tab, you'll be able to see sort of a range of stipend, which is intended to cover your living and housing expenses. There also are oftentimes research allowances or other travel allowances that would either is intended to cover your flight or would cover excess baggage fees, whatever. But each award will have slightly different benefits, but by and large, yes, like everything should be covered. Okay. Okay, I'm just looking at a couple more questions. It looks like we have time for a couple more. Can non-academic institutions such as galleries or artist residencies act as host institutions? Great question, and that is another one that will depend on the award. But yes, I'd say in general, yes, they're pretty open to galleries or artist residencies, museums, lots of other kinds of hosts. If you have any questions about whether your host would be appropriate, again, reaching out to the program officer responsible for that award, they'll either have the background or they can, if you give them the name of the institution, they can reach out to the Fulbright Commission or Embassy overseas and ask, is this an okay institution? And they'll get a yes or no answer, and they'll be able to communicate that back to you. But we see that a lot. Particularly if the country, in the award description, sometimes under location, it will say any appropriate host institution. And if that's the case, then they are really open and flexible to different kinds of hosts outside of the traditional university hosts. Okay. Is it recommended that one might apply for the first time to a location that traditionally has less applicants? If so, can one view the number of applicants to the previous countries in the past? The answer to that question is, with regard to the application numbers, no, there you cannot see previous application numbers. We don't post those, and we're not really able to discuss how competitive a particular award is. That said, if you kind of use your common sense, you'll be able to, where would you rather go on vacation? Where is a lot of research being done? Typically Western Europe does tend to be a little bit more competitive than North Africa, for example. But what you really want to do, I would not recommend making the decision about which host country you want to go to based on how competitive you think it is. Because if you want to go somewhere that you really want to go, and if you're proposing to go to a country just because you think that it's less competitive, that usually is pretty apparent in the application, and the reviewers will be able to kind of sniff that out. So I would recommend going with whatever country is the best fit for your project, and wherever you are able to make the strongest argument for why this host country, why this particular award, why is your research important? I would recommend kind of thinking about that and fit more than how more or less competitive you perceive an award to be. If you are a faculty and apply for an award but cannot receive leave from the entire of your university, can you defer your acceptance to the following year or to another period? The answer to that question is unfortunately no, we did not allow selectees to defer their acceptance. So if you are accepted for a grant and you have to turn it down, you would just need to apply again the next year. What is the deadline for the Flex program? So the Flex is just a feature on select awards within the catalog. So all of the, I think almost all of the awards, the deadline is August 1st. So if you're applying for a Flex grant, you would also be submitting your application at the same time as everyone else on August 1st. Okay. I'm going to do one more question before we wrap up. So a good question, is a stronger application if you include teaching as opposed to only research? So there really is no preference, with regard, unless the award specifically states that it's a teaching-only award, then you would not want to propose research. But, broadly speaking, if they allow all different kinds of activities, we do find that there's actually a pretty even split between people that propose to do a combination of teaching and research and research only. It's almost exactly the same, I think 40% and 40%. Do what you want to do. That said, I do think that if you're trying to answer the question of what is the benefit to the host institution, it's easier to make that argument if you're willing to do some kind of teaching. But it does not necessarily have to be formal classroom teaching. It could also look like, teaching a week-long workshop or doing some guest lecturing it can look however you want it to look. So my advice would be that if you are choosing to do only research and not include any teaching element, that you should talk about other ways that you're planning to engage with the host institution, either through some of the workshops I mentioned or mentoring students, collaborative research with other people at the host institution, et cetera. Okay. So unfortunately, that's all the time we have today for questions. Like I said, this webinar is going to be archived, so you can take a look at it again. On behalf of IIE, I just want to say thank you so much for taking the time to attend the webinar today, and we look forward to assisting you. Have a great day, everyone.